Hafide, Guahusi Jaina Schodemeyer, Tsumorudzu Kitsa Saipens and Guahan. Hello, my name is Jaina Schodemeyer. I am Chamorro, indigenous to the Mariana Islands.
Aloha mai, o Kiani Dwight, ku'oi noa, no Hawaii mai au, he Hawaii au. Hello, my name is Kiani Dwight. I am Native Hawaiian and from Hawaii.
Hello, my name is Ethan Chan. I am from New York.
And we are the hosts of
For Future Generations, Indigenous Perspectives on the Environment.
Before we begin, we would like to acknowledge that we gather on the unceded, stolen, ancestral lands of the Massachusetts and neighboring Wampanoag, Nipmuc, and Pawtucket peoples.
We acknowledge the truth of violence perpetrated in the name of this country, the violence directed towards Indigenous, Native, Aboriginal, First Nation, and First Peoples is ongoing.
This violence is present when Indigenous peoples' histories are erased, their cultures are trivialized, their resources are seized, their labor is exploited, their children are stolen, and their lives are taken. In order to fight against this violence, occupiers of this land must listen to and amplify Indigenous peoples' voices while fighting against their complicity.
We also celebrate the survival and resilience of Indigenous peoples and pay respect to Indigenous elders past, present, and rising.
We comprehend that land acknowledgments are a small but very important step towards ensuring a culture of respect, truth, and accountability in our community. It is imperative that these words develop into action as a sign of demonstrating our respect.
To find out whose land you're on, visit native-land.ca.
For this podcast, we have researched Indigenous perspectives on environmental injustices, such as those that lead to the physical displacement of populations and the mistreatment of natural resources.
White power structures have severely affected Indigenous communities' residences and relationships with their land, as well as the land itself.
We want to uplift and center Indigenous perspectives on environmental injustice. Today, we are focusing on the Mariana Islands in Micronesia. The Mariana Islands have been affected by colonization for the last 500 years. Currently, the archipelago is split between Guam, a U.S. unincorporated territory, and the Northern Mariana Islands, a U.S. commonwealth. As the Indigenous Chamorro community fights for sovereignty on their ancestral lands, they face urban and military development on the part of corporate and government interests.
Today, we are interviewing three folks from the Micronesia Climate Change Alliance, Monyeka, Christian, and Cami. It is so nice to have you here with us.
Yeah, we thank you for joining us.
Why don't we go ahead and let you introduce yourselves. Monyeka?
Hafide, Tiro, Guahusi, Monyeka, Diro, Kenanias, Las Marianas. My name is Monyeka. I am from the Mariana Islands, and I am a peace activist and a climate justice activist based out here in Micronesia, working with Micronesia Climate Change Alliance. And I'm a mother and an educator as well.
Buenas and Hafide, Guahusi Kami Aguirola, Familia and Cabeza, Zanga Degu, if we're going into that. I'm a Chamorro woman from Guahan, Gita Islas Marianas. I'm a daughter, I'm a sister, I'm the eldest of five, and a visual storyteller. I've worked with MCCA to produce some digital series, and I am currently a mentor in their digital storytelling program, Kulu.
Again, Hafide, everyone. My name is Christian Sinicolis. I'm also from the island of Guam, currently living in the village of Dedido. I'm a current student at the University of Guam, and I'm also a fellow organizer with Cami and Monyeka at the Micronesia Climate Change Alliance.
We are so happy to have you here, Monyeka, Cami, and Christian. Thank you for taking the time to join us. Could you please tell us about the Micronesia Climate Change Alliance and what the organization does?
Micronesia Climate Change Alliance started in 2018 after Typhoon Yudu hit our sister island, Saipan, and we saw the need for regional cohesion against the climate crisis throughout our region. And we built community-based solutions for the climate crisis on uplifting youth and, getting cohesion within our islands just so we can communicate more on how they handle the climate crisis and we can all handle it together.
Yeah, I remember when you two hit and, you know, just like keeping in touch with my family out there. And like, even still, there's still like damage around the islands from that massive storm. So it's really great how your organization is really, you know, connecting. A lot of times I feel like people think of like island communities of like being isolated, of like being small places, but we're not, you know, like we are connected. And so I really love how your organization connects us all.
Yeah, MCCA is just rooted really in the grassroots climate justice movement that's being fueled around the world. And we're hoping to bring a lot of the lessons and a lot of the resources that are being created in the climate justice and environmental justice movements to Micronesia. You know, Micronesia is a pretty vast, rich in culture and diverse area, but we are on the front lines of the climate crisis, and we are already have been experiencing the impacts of the warming world. Like Christian said, we were created and initiated after Typhoon Yutu, which is one of the strongest storms to ever make landfall in the U.S. and in the world, hit Saipan Antinian in 2018. And we realized that these sorts of storms are going to continuously threaten our island communities. And we also know things like sea level rise, coral reef loss, and all the other dangerous threats to our livelihoods that come with the climate crisis need more grounded work in our communities to talk about, to navigate through. And we're just here to fill that gap and to connect across our waters through all of our islands to help one another make it through this.
Thank you. I know you guys just touched a little bit about it, but if you could tell us, in your opinion, what are the most pressing environmental issues for Indigenous communities?
Sure. You know, Micronesia, and that was a term given to us by people not from our islands, is made up of different island nations, the Marshall Islands, the Federated States of Micronesia, which is made up of Chuuk, Pohnpei, Koh Rai, and Yap, and also Palau, and then the Marianas. We are all together in this like northwestern part of the Pacific Ocean. And for us, of course, as ocean-going people and seafaring people, we've been very, very connected to our mother ocean, or the Moana. And the threats to the ocean from plastic pollution, from nuclear waste discharge, or increased militarization of our lands, waters, and airs are all compounding threats with the climate crisis, as well as drought. And we also are communities that are highly transformed through colonization. A lot of our communities have migrated to other places. A lot of our people also suffer from non-communicable diseases that come with colonization. And we're all, especially in the island of Guahan, dealing with fighting for sovereignty and fighting for our rights to have more say over our resources and say over our future. And that's a huge Indigenous fight, specifically for the island of Guahan. But we're all connected in our struggles of wanting to ensure sustainability of our islands, given that we're so we're disconnected from many of the world's resources, and ensuring that our islands are healthy and our people are happy as we navigate through some of these really challenging times.
I think one thing you'll hear from a lot of people on Guahan and in the Marianas and in Micronesia is that we are literally on the front lines of the climate crisis, and we are literally drowning through the rising sea levels, through the strengthening of our typhoons in the region, through coral bleaching, through commercial fishing. And so these are the physical effects that happen to our land and our oceans. And, you know, as Chamorro people, we believe we are inherently connected to those things. So that is a direct effect on us as humans and as people. And then on the socio-political level, we have the effects of centuries of occupation and militarization that we have to battle on an everyday basis as well. The cost of living is very high here. We are getting displaced. There are many environmental issues that directly affect everyday life here as a Chamorro
with all of those things, you know, I did mention that we do community-based solutions for the climate crisis. And, you know, a lot of things that are happening right now, and, you know, not everyone is aware of, like, why. So one of my favorite things about MCCA is, you know, we do uplift and we do educate. So a lot of our community-based projects do revolve around, you know, finding solutions to certain crises, such as, like, our waste crisis. We have projects on how to educate on, like, why this is happening and how we can maybe divert this. And also educating, you know, the Gen Z and also the millennial generations, also the boomers, because sometimes they don't know and they don't want to know. But we do education on, like, the climate crisis.
Indigenous people make up 5% of the global population, but oversee over 80% of the world's biodiversity. It is imperative for Indigenous communities to be at the forefront of biodiversity conservation and climate activism. However, much of the current global discourse continues to silence Indigenous voices.
Ozawa Benishi Albert, an Indigenous rights and environmental justice community organizer from the Yuchi and Anishinaabe Nations, used her TED Talk platform to speak on representation of Indigenous leaders in COP26 and other mainstream environmental spaces. COP26, or Conference of Parties, is the annual UN climate change conference. In her speech, she highlighted the need for Indigenous representation as Indigenous communities are on the front lines of climate change.
When asked about her own experience at COP25 in Spain, our guest Muñeca echoes many of Albert's sentiments and expands on her personal experience in a space with other international climate activists.
COP25 in Madrid was life-changing, and then being able to share the opportunity to attend COP with another sister from the Mariana, Sheila, who attended COP26 in Glasgow just in November of 2021. Both of those experiences have been very expansive for both of us. And, you know, the Marianas is a part of the United States, and so our local leadership hasn't attended or helped to inform any of the negotiations that go on. And in these spaces at COP, or the Conference of Parties, is where the global community comes together to give updates on the climate crisis at home, and also inform the ways that we as a global community are going to hold fossil fuel companies accountable, hold our governments accountable to take action, and what action looks like, and how we are going to make it through this most challenging crisis of our lifetimes, or in humanity in general. And going there, so COP has, like, various spaces. It's kind of overwhelming. There's tens of thousands of people who come from all over the world. So many different languages are being spoken. So much is going on in the programming, both within the confines of the United Nations spaces, and as well as out in the outside spaces where civil society meets. And for me, it was really life affirming, because being from the islands and being an activist, and that term activist isn't even something that's, like, it's transformed over time, but it's still something that people are very wary of. And we're seen as kind of, like, out there with these big ideas, and it's not necessarily something that everybody gravitates to. So when I was in this space, we're kind of all the people, at least in the civil society spaces, were on the same wavelength, and knowing that the climate crisis is a huge issue, and that not enough is being done to tackle it. It was just really affirming. And it was really special for me going to Madrid in Spain, especially being from the Marianas, in which we experienced 300 years of Spanish colonization, and we were the first in the Pacific to be colonized by Europeans. And going to Spain, the fatherland of our colonizers, and being there with other Indigenous activists who were also whose lands were also colonized, and people were also oppressed by Spaniards from Mexico to Chile to all over the Americas, sharing space with those women activists and organizers, and coming into ceremony and doing some ritual work with them in Spain was I can't even really explain how powerful those experiences were for me. But it was really just life affirming to know that there's so many people on the ground doing this really important work with very little resources, and all to protect Mother Earth and all to protect our future generations from any unnecessary duress. So it's a beautiful experience, and I really am hoping to bring Christian and Cami and more people from our region to COP this year in Egypt.
It's really inspiring talking to you all and about what you're doing, and also like just from like young Chamorro leaders, it's really exciting. And I'm really curious about like what role do the younger generations play in like building a better future? Like what problems do you see that we need to solve? And like what responsibilities do you feel the younger generations are kind of like stepping into?
Yeah, both within the Mariana Islands and Pacifica more broadly, or if you want to connect it to the United States, anything.
You know, youth, no matter where they are at the front lines of the climate crisis, because they're the ones, and it's going to be them who are going to be living through the most destabilizing impacts of the climate crisis, whether it be storms or sea level rise. The youth are going to, when they're older, are going to have to be the ones to be the leaders. So it's great. It's important to give them the skills of leadership now, and give them the skills of building resilience and managing self-care as a critical part of the way that they show up to do this kind of work and just show up for their families. If there's anything that I really have loved, the way that activism has moved, that I've experienced in my 10 plus years of being an activist, is the prioritization of self-care and ensuring that burnout isn't something that everybody experiences. It isn't something that everyone is just bound to experience. It's definitely wanting to be more mindful of people and where they're at and what they can give, especially since most of this work is free labor. And most of this work is voluntarily led. So having the conversations about mental wellness and overall wellness and well-being be centered to the ways that we at MCCA are accountable to one another, and the ways that we want to model movement work, is really important, especially wanting to be this sort of like soft space or soft point of entry for people to come into this kind of activism. And doing this with youth is so important because they're the ones who have the energy and have a lot of skills innately in them, knowing that they've had the internet from day one, and all these tools from day one. Like, they're the ones who have these tech savvy skills to share information more widely and effectively. And they're the ones who also just should be the most motivated and the ones who help guide and lead the way.
Yes, I completely agree with that. And then to add on, I like to still think of myself as the youths. Yeah. I'm considering myself still youth at 22. So one thing that I've learned being in these spaces and being in these spaces, I'm still very fresh in these spaces as well, is having a listening ear. You know, something that we're taught from a very young age is to listen to our elders and you know, listen to what they have to say and learn from it. And that's something that I've brought into this work as a youth is, and this is something I talked about with Manyaka and two others in our EJMF team, is that oftentimes I find myself just listening in meetings or listening in these conference calls because I find that gives me a sense of like a safe space, is having that listening ear and being able to just, you know, take in all of this basically like spiritual essence from all of these elders, right? And then as an elder within the youth space, something that I like to practice is, you know, the idea of refraining from like the act of shaming. Like if they maybe mispronounce something, or if they have maybe the not so right idea, there's no right or wrong idea or anything like that. But, you know, if there's like a disagreement, there's no space for shame in this space. And that's something that I like to uphold within the environmental justice space that I participate in, and being very patient with our youths as well. And, you know, Christian mentioned the idea of educating, constantly talking story, having conversations, picking their brains. That's something that's very important to me as an older sister as well. So taking all of these personal experiences and applying them is super important to me when working with the youth.
Yeah, I'm same. I do like to think of myself as youthful, even at 28. But, you know, I will also add, like, you know, like the Gen Zs, they're also hungry, you know, for, you know, wanting to help and wanting to utilize. And like, you know, I'm business, Cami's art, and Yek is like our community driven leader. And, you know, we all have like a place to part. A place, you know, within, you know, activism and like trying to get, you know, the mission accomplished.
This has been part one of For Future Generations, Indigenous Perspectives on the Environment.
Keep listening to hear more from our interview with Monyaka de Oro, Cami Aguirola, and Christian San Nicolas from the Micronesia Climate Change Alliance. For a generation, just beyond my reach, not beyond my sight. Hope for a generation.